Okay, so I will talk about effects of neutrino mixings on the supernova neutrino signal, and after giving some introduction, motivations, and some generalities, I will focus on methods to study these effects and their physical potential. I will mainly focus on neutrinos from a future galactic supernova, but if I have time, I will also talk a little bit about past observations. And finally, I will give perspectives and conclusions. So today, we know that neutrinos oscillate due to masses and mixings, and from atmospheric and solar neutrinos, and also from the contribution of Cumberland, we know already some quantities that you can read here. And the next goals for the future studies of neutrino oscillations are basically to measure the small theta-1-3 mixing angle, which describes the timed mixture of the electron neutrino flavor in the third mass eigenstate, and find out the mass, the hierarchy of the neutrino mass spectrum, which I will denote as normal or inverted, corresponding to the two possible signs of the delta m squared 3-1 splitting. You can see from this cartoon what this means. So the one possibility means that the solar pair of states is the lightest one, and the other case means that the states which are responsible for the oscillation of solar neutrinos are the heaviest one. In this talk, we will focus basically on oscillation physics, and I will not talk on other non-oscillation aspects, which, however, are interesting as well. So supernova neutrinos can contribute to the achievement of the goals I have mentioned because with respect to other types of neutrinos, like solar neutrinos or atmospheric and reactor neutrinos, they correspond to a different physical setup and therefore different oscillation effects and different possibilities of studying neutrino mixings and the mass hierarchy. Indeed, I don't need to say much because a lot has already been said, so let me just give some examples. One example is that neutrinos from a supernova have energies in this window between 10, say, and 80 MeVs, which is larger than the energy of solar neutrinos, and these correspond in principle to different oscillation physics, like, for instance, larger oscillation effects in the matter of the Earth for LMA parameters. And also, these neutrinos come in a short pulse of duration of 10 seconds, and they have a very long baseline of order 10 kiloparsecs for a galactic supernova, and this allows to perform time delay tests, for instance, to test the neutrino mass. But what is most interesting for the study of flavor conversion is that neutrinos cross layers of matter with very high density inside the star, which can be as high as 10 to the 10 grams per centimeter cube, and which is much higher than any possible density achievable in the solar system. If you compare these densities with the resonance density corresponding to the atmospheric mass square splitting, for these energies of order 10 MeV, you see that this resonance energy is of order 10 to the 3 grams per centimeter cube, which is not achievable in the solar system, but is well achievable in this environment. So this is very interesting because this means that the theta-1-3 angle, which is small, can be resonantly amplified according to the MW effect and therefore give large conversion effects. However, as it was re-emphasized in the previous talks, this is a different setup, and therefore it has different difficulties. The main difficulty is, as it is clear from George Fuller's talk and Christian's talk, is that we, in contrast, for instance, with the Sun, we still don't have a standard supernova model. So The physics of neutrino transport is so complicated with the interplay of so many different physical effects that despite the strong efforts, still we don't know well important quantities like the shape of the energy spectra of the neutrinos, whether they are Fermi-Dirac or distorted or pinched, as people usually say. We don't know how strong the differences in the fluxes and spectra of these neutrinos are for the different flavors. And we don't know really well the time evolution of these neutrino fluxes during these 10 seconds of the duration of the burst. And also it's important that we know the density profile of the star because this is relevant for the MSW effect. So it is, in principle, it is predicted to be a power law, but there could be deviations, and also there could be important changes with time, as we have learned from George Fuller's talk, due to shockwave propagations. So, and this is something to be taken into account. I would like to remind the main aspects of the neutrino energy spectra. The naive argument is that we expect thermal spectra because neutrinos are in thermal equilibrium inside the star in the so-called neutrino sphere. So intuitively, we expect Fermi-Dirac spectra. And also, due to the different interactions with the medium of the different flavors, we expect the so-called hierarchy of the energy spectra, which is some sort of traditional concept. The fact that these average energies for the different flavors have this satisfy these inequalities, and here I quote 10 indicative numbers, just to give an example. And also another traditional concept is the so-called equipartition of luminosities, the fact that luminosities in the different flavors are similar. Something which was mentioned today in a question by Sergei Petkov is that it was recently pointed out that that the physics is more complicated than that. So this naive picture is not really realistic, probably. And it was recently pointed out by Georg Raffelt in this paper, for instance, that if you consider a diffusion of the non-electron neutrinos, the effect of diffusion is to change the shape of the spectra so that at the end they are not really thermal, even though the thermal Fermi-Dirac form is a good effective description. And also the hierarchy of the energies is there but may not be very strong, and this is important for oscillation effects. Also, the so-called equipartition of luminosities is an indicative concept because these luminosities can be different by a factor of 2 or so. So there is no fundamental reason to have equal luminosities. This is the point. So the conclusion of this first part is that clearly the particle physics and the astrophysics part aspects of this phenomenon of supernova neutrinos are tightly connected, so that you cannot, if you want to probe oscillation parameters, you need to take into account large astrophysical uncertainties, and the other way around, if you want to test the astrophysics with an observation of future supernova neutrinos, you need to take into account that these neutrinos get converted. So what you see is not what was produced inside the star. So let me now say something about the life of supernova neutrinos from production to detection, which means conversion effects. Conversion effects are summarized in this level crossing diagram, which is here shown for normal hierarchy, which is the scheme in which the third mass eigenstate is the heaviest one. This illustrates what I have already mentioned, the fact that neutrinos are produced in regions of very high density so that all the mixing angles are suppressed by the effect of matter. And as they propagate through lower density layers of the star, they undergo resonant conversion. Here I denote as nu x the non-electron flavors, nu mu and nu tau, because they are predicted to have the same luminosities and spectra, so they can be treated effectively as one flavor. So you can see that in this scheme with normal hierarchy, there are two level crossings for neutrinos. One level crossing occurs at high density, which is the density mentioned before, and it is determined by the theta-1-3 angle and the atmospheric mass squared splitting, while the other level crossing occurs at lower densities of order few, order 10 grams per centimeter cube, and it is governed by the solar pair of parameters. It can be checked that for LMA parameters, the conversion in this region is always adiabatic, so there is no significant transition between these two eigenstates of the Hamiltonian. In conversely, the adiabaticity character of this resonance depends on theta-1-3 quite significantly, as I will show in a minute. Yes. This one, it may depend. I'm thinking about that in these days, and what I can think of is that there may be some dependence, because these resonances. Okay, I think that there is no dependence if these resonances are infinitely separated. So. Right. So if you, there could be some dependence, probably small, due to the influence of this resonance. So basically, you cannot completely decouple the dynamics of the two resonances. I'm thinking about that. I think it's an interesting problem. Okay. So in the antineutrino channel, there are no level crossings, so things are much simpler. And let me also mention that. If neutrinos cross the Earth, this range of densities is met inside the Earth, and therefore there could be significant matter effects also inside the Earth, and this is another interesting aspect. So the effect of conversion inside the star and eventually inside the Earth is that the observed fluxes of electron neutrinos and antineutrinos are a combination of the original fluxes of the electron flavors and non-electron flavors inside the star, produced inside the star. And the coefficients depend on the conversion pattern. In particular, I would like to stress this parameter pH, which is the transition probability in this high-density resonance, which appears in the expression of the electron-neutrino flux, because the resonance affects the conversion of neutrinos, while it is absent in the expression of electron-antineutrino flux. These other coefficients depend on effects associated with this other range of density, and in absence of Earth crossing, are given by simple functions of the theta-1-2 angle. So if you have that the non-electron flavors are hotter, the effect of conversion is to give an hardening of the spectra with respect to the prediction in absence of conversion. Because this is for normal hierarchy, and for normal hierarchy, the high-density resonance affects the neutrinos, but not the antineutrinos. So for antineutrinos, this third state propagates completely decoupled from these other two, and there is no transition associated with this range of density. Right. This is another way to put it, yes. So if the mass hierarchy is inverted, things are similar with an important difference, which is that now the third mass eigenstate is the lightest. And this means that the high-density resonance is now affecting the antineutrinos. And therefore, you have that this transition probability pH is now appearing in the expression of the flux of electron antineutrinos. The other coefficients are the same. So at this point, I think it's clear what is the dependence of supernova neutrinos to the mass hierarchy. The dependence is in the fact that this transition probability is in one or in the other expressions depending on what the mass hierarchy is. And the dependence on theta 1,3, which is the other goal for the future, is inside the expression of this transition probability, which can be calculated analytically from the Landau-Zerner formula. If you take an analytical expression of the density profile of the star, like, for instance, this power law r to the minus 3, which is a good prediction for the progenitor star, so before shockwave effects enter, which happens at late time, so at least for the few seconds of the burst. And this is the result where you can see the dependence on theta 1,3 here. And this figure shows the dependence on tangent squared of theta 1,3. And you can see that as this parameter increases, the transition turns from perfectly non-adiabatic to perfectly adiabatic. And transition between the two regimes is in this interval between 10 to the minus 5 and 10 to the minus 4, which gives you an idea of what could be the sensitivity of supernova neutrinos to this parameter. So it's in down to this range. And I will talk more about that, but I think that at this point you can already understand that this is, in principle, very promising. So before I go on, however, I would like to stress a point which is obvious, maybe, but it's worth mentioning, that clearly the observability of any conversion effects relies on the fact that the fluxes in the different neutrino flavors are different, because if they are equal, clearly any permutation between each other gives no effect on the observations. And this you can see from this expression. So conversion effects are built are inside this parameter, and clearly if you have equal fluxes, there is a cancellation and you don't see any conversion effects. So this is another point which makes you understand why it is important to know the features of the original neutrino fluxes. So now I would like to talk a little bit about what we can learn from a future galactic supernova. And to learn something, we need to detect something. So I will briefly summarize the detectors which are available. So we have water Cherenkov detectors like SuperCamioCande, heavy water detectors like SNOW and scintillator detectors. And in the following, I will focus on the main signals in neutrino channel and antineutrino channel, which means these signals from this process, electron antineutrino and proton giving positron and neutron, which in SuperCamioCande for a supernova, typical supernova in the center of our galaxy, can give up to 8,000 events, which is very, very good, very interesting. And I will focus on these other events, electron neutrinos on deuterium, giving two protons and an electron, which gives a few hundred of events for the same parameters. And this is for the SNOW detector. But in principle, there are many other processes which could be studied and in principle could give relevant information. So how to extract information on theta 1,3 and the mass hierarchy from data from a future galactic supernova? The main problem, as I emphasized, is that you have to deal with many parameters, most of them of astrophysical nature, like the average energies of the original fluxes produced inside the star, their luminosities, These parameters are the so-called pinching parameters, which describe basically the amount of distortion with respect to the Fermi-Dirac spectra, the density profile, this is the slope of the profile, and also there are conversion parameters which are known now, but they have some errors, so they are known with a certain error. One approach is to perform a global fit of all the data available, and this has been explored in these papers last year. This approach is extensive, so it allows to probe oscillation parameters and the astrophysical parameters all together. But clearly, you can, for practical reasons, you cannot have more than two or three fitting parameters. So you need to reduce the number of variables, and this means that there is a certain amount of a priori assumptions in that. Another approach which I have studied in a recent paper in collaboration with Alexei Smirnov is to identify certain observables which are particularly sensitive to the oscillation parameters, theta 1 3, and to the mass hierarchy, and study them analytically as much as possible. And the advantages of this approach is that well, it's less extensive, so it's focused on the oscillation parameters. But since it is mostly analytical, it provides physical insight more than a global fit. And also, you can treat analytically basically all the 14 parameters which I counted and listed before. So in principle, you can have uncertainties more under control. So the statement "more model independent" is not really precise. I would like to say that you can have uncertainties under control. So what we did was to consider a time-integrated neutrino spectra, neutrino and antineutrino spectra, collected for in the first few seconds in order to avoid the late time effects, which are more model dependent, for instance, shockwave effects. And we considered the spectra for electron neutrino and electron antineutrino data. And for each of them, we considered the following observables that you can see here: the average energy, the width of the spectrum, and the number of events in the low and high energy tails, which are defined by certain cuts in the spectra. And for each of these observables in neutrinos and antineutrino channel, we take the ratios. And we show that these quantities are particularly sensitive to the oscillation parameters. For instance, it is possible to show that using these observables, you can distinguish between extreme possibilities. And by extreme, I mean that the possibility of having completely adiabatic transition, pH equal to zero, normal hierarchy or inverted hierarchy, and the other extreme is pH equal to one, so completely non-adiabatic transition in the high-density resonance, in which case the mass hierarchy really doesn't matter. The physics is the same. Let me remind you that these two possibilities, pH equal to zero and pH equal to one, correspond to relatively large sine square of theta 1 3 and smaller sine square of theta 1 3. So if you consider the observables, like for instance the ratio of widths and the ratio of average energies, it is possible to see that they satisfy certain simple inequalities because which can be easily explained in terms of the amount of permutation between the original spectra due to conversion. For instance, as an example, if you consider this scenario, pH equal to zero, normal hierarchy, in this scenario, the electron neutrinos are completely converted, and therefore the spectrum you see is due to the original non-electron spectrum, which is more energetic. which explains this inequality, for instance. And also, and vice versa, this spectrum observed for neutrinos will be narrower because it will be a Fermi-Dirac, while the other one in the electron antineutrino channel is an admixture with certain coefficients of the two original neutrino spectra, and therefore it has a larger width, which explains this feature. So this is very indicative, and what one has to do is to do it numerically. So we perform the scatter plots considering this type of events at SNOW and Supercamiocande. And the plot is shown in the space of these variables. So the ratio of average energies, the ratio of number of events in the high energy tail, and the ratio of the widths of the spectra. And we perform the scan on several parameters like temperatures, luminosities, pinching parameters, and we took also into account errors on the known oscillation parameters. And we have been rather conservative. So you can see that we took quite large intervals. And this is the result. You can see here that there are regions in the parameter space in which only one possibility or two are can be achieved and can be realized. And this means that if your experimental result lies in here, for instance, you can exclude the other possibilities, which gives information on the oscillation parameters.
What are these boxes?
The boxes, you mean these ones? I marked them just as an example. So this is, for instance, to show that if your point is here, this scenario, pH equal to zero and inverted hierarchy, and this other scenario, pH equal to zero, normal hierarchy, are basically excluded. So the boxes are marked just to give an example.
What sort of an error bar does it give you in this plot? I mean, the error bar is much bigger than the plot, it's irrelevant.
That's right. I suggest that you wait the next transparency. I'm sorry?
What is the value of Tx or Tb bar in this plot?
The values of Tx. You mean the values of these ratios? Yeah, I understand the question. So, basically the values which can discriminate are associated to ratios of temperatures which are not too close to one. So yeah, this is because, as I said, if you have very similar spectra, you lose sensitivity. So
what do you do about the other parameters like delta M? 2-1 squared and CP violating phase, do they just somehow
Delta M2-1 does not affect, because for any value of the solar delta M squared, the conversion is adiabatic. So as soon as the conversion is adiabatic, the value itself really doesn't matter. And the CP violating phase also doesn't matter, because basically here you're not sensitive to oscillations, but you are sensitive to basically averaged conversion. So any oscillation phase just, CP violating phase just cancels out. Okay, so let's see. So let me just mention that the ratio of number of events in the high energy tails is particularly interesting, and in this paper I referred to, we perform a detailed analytical study of this quantity. The main feature is that there is a certain amount of fortunate cancellations of uncertainties, and which allow a particularly simple analytical treatment, but I will not go into the details with that. And now I think I can more or less answer the question about errors on this figure, which refers to the ratio of number of events in the high energy tail, which is the quantity we have studied in most detail. This quantity is shown as a function of psi squared of theta 1,3 for normal hierarchy and inverted hierarchy once all the astrophysical uncertainties and errors on, for instance, theta 1,2 and the atmospheric splitting are taken into account. And as an effect of all these uncertainties, you don't have a line, but you have bands. And for normal hierarchy, the possible values of this parameter are within the solid lines, red lines, and for inverted hierarchy, it's the possible values are between the dashed lines. So clearly the figure corresponds to certain to a specific example given certain cuts, high energy cuts, which are optimized to provide the best result. And you can see that depending on where your experimental point is and also depending on the error you have, statistical error basically, you can conclude something or not. So for instance, consider if you have a point here, so the ratio being close to 0.25, for instance, for these parameters, then if you have small enough error, you can conclude that the mass hierarchy is normal because you are outside the allowed region for the inverted hierarchy, and you get a lower bound on theta 1,3, which is something like few 10 to the minus 5. But clearly, if you have a larger error, this is to answer the question, if you have a larger error, you may not be able to distinguish. And the error depends, the statistical error basically depends on, well, the luminosities, which we don't really know very well, and also on the distance. So here I plot the possible experimental result with the statistical error for 8.5 kiloparsec, which is the distance to the center of the galaxy, and a smaller distance. So here you can have an idea. If your point is here, for instance, you cannot distinguish between the two mass hierarchies, but you can have an upper bound in the case that the mass hierarchy is inverted, and the upper bound is quite strong. It's few 10 to the minus 5, which is very interesting. And also you can see, you can have an idea what happens if your point is here. So this figure refers to the case in which the neutrinos don't cross the Earth, so in absence of Earth crossing, but the generalization to these other cases is easy to do. And I would like to mention other possibilities to probe the theta 1,3 angle and the mass hierarchy, and one of them is to study the Earth matter effects. The idea is that given the position of the supernova with respect to the detectors available at the time, it may happen that one detector is not shielded by the Earth and the other one is, and in which case you should expect different fluxes for electroneutrinos. And for normal hierarchy, you have that the difference basically is proportional to pH, which is the internal function of theta 1,3. So you can get information on theta 1,3. And also you can get information on the mass hierarchy because this parameter, as I said, switches to antineutrino channel in case of inverted hierarchy. And another possibility is to study shockwave effects, which have been mentioned by George Fuller today. And the idea is that the passage of the shockwave through the resonance layer can change the adiabaticity character of the high-density resonance, which means that you can have that your parameter pH depends on time. And this time dependence depends, in turn, on the theta 1,3 angle. So this time dependence is particularly strong in this interval of sine square of theta 1,3. And in this paper, we mentioned some ideas to study this effect, which is to consider the distortion, the time-dependent distortion of the energy spectrum observed, and also the fact that the Earth matter effect can appear at late times. So there could be some time dependence in this expression here. Okay, so I will briefly flash something about the past observations, which means supernova 1987A. And the point I would like to stress is that now we know that neutrinos oscillate. So when we analyze the data from the supernova of 87, we should take into account conversion effects. The data come from Kamiokande and IMB. Both of them were water Cherenkov, and they saw electron antineutrino events, 11 in Kamiokande and 8 in IMB. And this is the distribution in energy of the events. We are in general happy with that because the statistics is so small that basically the fact that they are not so different is already very satisfactory. However, you can see certain differences, like, for instance, the fact that here, at around 40 MeVs, the Kamiokande data are suppressed, while the IMB data has the maximum. And also the shape of the IMB spectrum is sort of strange, because you have the maximum here and nothing at higher energies. So the point is that I want to make is that we cannot really attach a deep meaning to these differences. But however, differences are not so strange, and actually they should be expected, because at the time the supernova was observed, the detectors were placed in such a way that the neutrinos crossed the Earth with two different baselines, and which means that due to regeneration effects inside the Earth, neutrinos oscillated, and they came to the two detectors with different oscillation phase. And as a curiosity, I would like to show you this figure, which was obtained taking the best fit point of the solar plus Kamland data, the LMA best fit point. And you can see that the strange features that I have shown on the energy spectra correspond to oscillation minima and maxima. So this is the region in which you have this discrepancy between the IMB and the Kamiokande, and one of them has a minimum of oscillation and the other one has a maximum. And also here you have, where you have this suppression in the IMB data, you have an oscillation minimum. So maybe this is nothing deep, but it's curious. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
What
30 MeV.
No, a little bit to the right.
A little bit here.
That's what?
30, yeah, about 35 MeV.
Right.
Yes.
What's this y-axis?
I'm sorry?
Tell us what the y-axis is.
Oh, I'm sorry. The vertical axis is the conversion probability. So when the conversion probability is small, you should expect a suppression of the hard part of the spectrum. So, yeah. Okay, so I think it's time to conclude. But before concluding, I would like to explicitly say what are the desiderata for progressing in this field. So what we would like to have and what we really need to do a good job with probing the oscillation parameters with supernova neutrinos. From the experimental side, I think we need a large new E detector, because we have a large anti-new E detector, but still the statistics will be poor if you consider, for instance, SNOW. The SNOW detector as a new E detector. And also another thing is that we need long-lived detectors, because supernova explosions are rare events, so we don't know which detectors will be still alive 30 years from now. And also it's very good to have large volume detectors, so proton decay dedicated experiments are very welcome, and it's a very good thing to have joint activity between different experiments, like the SNEWS network of experiments. And from the side of theory, I think I don't need to say that any work in numerical simulations would be very much appreciated, especially we would like to have a consensus between different models, so still different models have different results, and this confuses me, at least. And also, it's important to understand the mechanism of explosion, because for analyzing the observation of supernova neutrinos, we need simulation to run to later times, so throughout all the 10 seconds of the burst. And clearly, it doesn't make much sense to go to 10 seconds if the explosion is not achieved after less than 1 second. Okay, so the conclusions are that supernova neutrinos can be used to probe the theta-1-3 mixing angle and the neutrino mass hierarchy. But one needs to be careful, because this requires the inclusion of large astrophysical uncertainties. It is possible to identify and study analytically certain observables in which there is a certain amount of cancellation of astrophysical uncertainties, and which are particularly sensitive to the conversion parameters under discussion. The main results of this type of analysis is that the establishment of the mass hierarchy appears difficult precisely because of the large astrophysical uncertainties. And basically, the main results will be conditional bounds on the theta-1-3, which could be very interesting, because, as I showed, theta-1-3 can be probed basically down to sine square of theta-1-3 10 to the minus 5 or so, which is very interesting. Okay, thank you.
I wonder about the coherence about the supernova neutrinos, because if they have different masses, they will travel with different velocities and they will arrive at different times. And so you lose the phase of the coherence.
Yes, and indeed, this is what happens. So if you assume, if you consider that neutrinos are emitted by the star in flavor states, they will, however, end up at Earth in mass eigenstates because of the loss of the coherence. And yeah, this is what happens. Actually, it's not really relevant anymore, because the transition in the low density resonance is adiabatic. So anyway, the neutrinos come out in mass eigenstates. But yeah, that's true. So even if you consider flavor states coming out, they decohere. That's why I said that I really would like to have a large mu e detector. Yeah.
Okay, if there are no other questions, let's thank Dr. Levin.